Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 6, Creation of the Universal Form, Text 36.
Tatapi
kertayami
anga
yata
mati
yata
rutam
kertim
hare
svam
sat
kartum
giram
anya
bidhasatim.
Tatapi
keritayam
yanga
yata mati
yata
shrutam
keritim
hare
svam
sat kartum
giramanya
vidhasatim.
Tatapi
keritayam
yanga
yata mati
yata
shrutam
kertim
hare
svam
sat kartum
giramanya
vidhasatim.
In spite of my inability, whatever I've been able to hear from the spiritual master, and whatever I could assimilate, I'm now describing in glorification of the Lord by pure speech, for otherwise my power of speaking would remain unchaste. Responsible. In spite of my inability,
in spite of my inability,
whatever I've been able to hear,
whatever I've been able to hear
from the spiritual master,
from the spiritual master,
and whatever I could assimilate,
and whatever I could assimilate,
I am now describing in glorification of the Lord,
in glorification of the Lord,
by pure speech. For otherwise my power of speaking, would remain unchaste. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The purification of the conditioned soul necessitates purification of his consciousness. By the presence of consciousness, the presence of the transcendental soul is verified. And as soon as consciousness leaves the body, the material body is not active. Consciousness is perceived, therefore, by activity. The theory put forward by empiric philosophers that consciousness can remain in an inactive state is the proof of their poor fund of knowledge. One should not become unchaste by stopping the activities of pure consciousness. If the activities of pure consciousness are stopped, certainly the conscious living force will be otherwise engaged, because unless engaged, the consciousness has no standing. Consciousness cannot be silent, even for a moment. When the body does not act, the consciousness acts in the form of dreams. Unconsciousness is artificial. By induced extraneous help, it remains for a limited period. But when the intoxication of the drug is finished, or when one is awake, the consciousness again acts earnestly. Maitreya's statement is that in order to avoid unchaste conscious activities, he was trying to describe the unlimited glories of the Lord, although he did not have the ability to describe them perfectly. This glorification of the Lord is not a product of research, but the result of hearing submissively from the authority of the spiritual master. It is also not possible to repeat all that one has heard from his spiritual master, but one can narrate as far as possible by one's honest endeavor. It does not matter whether the Lord's glories are fully explained or not. One must attempt to engage one's bodily, mental, and verbal activities in the transcendental glorification of the Lord. Otherwise, such activities will remain unchaste and impure. The existence of the conditioned soul can be purified only by the method of engaging mind and speech in the service of the Lord. The Tridandi Sannyasi of the Vaishnava school accepts three rods representing the vow to engage in the service of the Lord with body, mind, and speech. Whereas the Ekadandi Sannyasi takes the vow to become one with the Supreme. Since the Lord is the Absolute, there is no distinction between him and his glories. The glories of the Lord, as chanted by the Vaishnava Sannyasi, are as substantial as the Lord himself. And thus, while glorifying the Lord, the devotee becomes one with him in transcendental interest, although he remains eternally a transcendental servitor. This simultaneously one and different position of the devotee makes him eternally purified, and thus his life becomes a complete success. Translation: in spite of my inability, whatever I've been able to hear from the spiritual master, and whatever I could assimilate, I'm now describing in glorification of the Lord by pure speech. For otherwise, my power of speaking would remain unchaste. Om Jnana Tamarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuramilitam Yena Tasmaya Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpa Tarubhyas Chakripa Sunubhya Enacha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunacharya Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhaktavinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, this is Maitreya speaking, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct? Maitreya. So, he's very nicely expressing, actually, the position of the aspiring devotee, and very nicely expressing an important realization of an aspiring devotee, a realization that we must all have in order to advance nicely in Krishna consciousness. That is, that we must always engage in glorification of the Lord, engaging all of our senses, engaging all of our faculties, everything, karmana, manasa, gira, all of our activities with all of our various senses, our minds and our words, everything must be engaged in glorification of the Lord nicely, in a bona fide way, in devotional service. So that engagement in the glorification of the Lord, that full engagement, cannot be done in a whimsical way. It has to be done strictly by repeating what one has heard from the spiritual master. Otherwise, if we act in any other way, then this is what he calls asati, unchaste. Elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's explained that for a woman to be unchaste is the worst thing. So many other things may be done. As she is described in Shastra, that women are never punishable. Women and children, and old men, and old people, or old men. They're never punishable. Even if they do something which is very wrong. But if a woman is unchaste, then this is considered to be the worst thing that she can do. So by describing the power of speaking, which is not engaged in the glorification of the Lord, as asatin, we should understand that Maitreya is making a very strong statement, actually. But this is a very bad thing. Very bad thing. For the power of speech to be unchaste, or for us to be unchaste in our bodily activities in any regard. This is very bad. And it has to be avoided at all cost. Srila Prabhupada is making the point very nicely in the purport that it's not sufficient. If we want to avoid this unchasteness, it's not sufficient to simply avoid activities, to avoid the manifestation of consciousness by going into some unconscious state, sleeping or taking some type of intoxicant, something like this, and thinking that now I'm acting nicely because I've suspended my activities, so now I couldn't be accused of being unchaste. Prabhupada's making the point here that one may suspend one's conscious activities for some time by some artificial means or some way or another, but it's just a question of a little time. And then Prabhupada says that one's consciousness will again act very earnestly. Consciousness is the eternal quality of the soul. And seeing it as there as an essential part of the structure of the soul, or the eternal, an eternal characteristic of the soul which can never be removed. So it'll always be there. It'll always be there. You can't really achieve unconsciousness. Prabhupada is explaining, of course, in the purport, how consciousness is the symptom of life. That if consciousness apparently becomes inactive, or that the fact that consciousness may become inactive or be completely suspended, Prabhupada is saying is impossible, seeing it's an eternal part of the nature of the soul. Srila Jiva Goswami gives a very nice description of how consciousness is acting always. Even when one appears to be unconscious, one is not unconscious. Very interesting point. He describes that consciousness acts on three levels: waking, sleeping, and deep sleep. When one is in the wakeful state, then consciousness is manifest in the body. And we are perceiving so many things through sight, hearing, touch, taste, like that, smelling. So our consciousness is manifest in the body. But when we're sleeping, then our consciousness is not manifest through the body. We're no longer aware of what we're feeling. Although the body is in contact, when we're sleeping, the body is in contact with the bed, like that. And there may be sounds around us. And there's so many things to be seen around us. But our consciousness is not functioning. It's not manifest on that platform, on the bodily platform, when we're sleeping. But our consciousness is manifest on the platform of the subtle body, at least on the platform of the mind, that we dream every night, or generally most nights. When you sleep, you dream of something, and it's not uncommon at all that you wake up in the morning and you remember, oh yes, I dreamt of this, I dreamt of that, different things. Of course, because when we're sleeping, we're in gross ignorance, very deep ignorance. Then our dreams, they are generally quite confused. They're generally quite confused. One devotee was telling me a while ago, actually a couple of years ago, that he had one dream of one very senior devotee in this movement. And it was rather a long and involved dream, but one part was that the telephone rang, and he picked up the telephone, and there on the other end was this very senior devotee, and he was talking to him about something. And then what should happen, but the door opens, and that same devotee walked into the room while he was speaking to him on the telephone. So our dreams can be, they're prone to be very confused. And then the devotee on the other end of the phone said, you know, there's another me, but it's not really me. And one of us wants to kill you. One of us wants to kill you. And this was actually one of the most senior devotees in the whole movement. So, you know, it's like that. We're in deep ignorance when we're sleeping. And when you're in deep ignorance, then everything becomes very strange. Everything becomes very distorted on the mental platform. So, but at least while we're sleeping, even though we're not, our consciousness is not manifest on the bodily platform, our consciousness is manifest on the mental platform. But when we're in deep sleep, then we no longer dream. We no longer dream. Sometimes it may happen that we wake up in the morning and we've been in very deep sleep, like perhaps you got very tired the day before, something like that. So you sleep very deeply. And you wake up and you feel very refreshed. You can't remember any dreams. In fact, it may even be like you just fell asleep and then suddenly you just wake up and several hours have passed. And you can't remember, but you feel very refreshed. So that is deep sleep. Deep sleep. So in deep sleep, the consciousness, of course, is withdrawn from the gross body, but the consciousness is also withdrawn from the subtle body. So there's no dreams, there's no consciousness. Actually, there's no consciousness that we are aware of, because we are only aware of our gross and subtle body. We are not really perceiving our spiritual nature. So when the consciousness is withdrawn from the gross body and the subtle body, then we, meaning the conditioned self, we are not aware of how the consciousness is situated at that time. But Jiva Goswami explains that at that time, when you're in deep sleep, the consciousness is situated in itself, or the consciousness is situated in the soul, which this consciousness being part of the soul, actually, or at least part of the nature of the soul. So therefore, he says, this is an interesting point, when you wake up from deep sleep and you feel refreshed and you feel very good, and then immediately you think, oh, I slept very well. There's a very pleasant feeling there. He says that this pleasant feeling that I've slept very well and things are very nice, he says this is a type of recollection of being situated on the spiritual platform, of the consciousness being situated on the level of the soul, free from the interference of the gross and subtle body. So he says, very interestingly, that the state of consciousness in deep sleep can be considered to be something like Brahman realization. Something like Brahman realization. And when you wake up and you feel refreshed and you feel very nice and you think, oh, I slept well. The idea that I slept well, it's a type of a recollection. It means that consciousness is there of having been situated on the platform of the soul. Anyway, because the fact is that consciousness is always there. Consciousness cannot be switched off. It's just a matter of where it may be placed. That's all. Either on the gross platform and the subtle platform simultaneously, or just on the subtle platform, or not even on the subtle platform, but on the platform of the soul. And he says that actually Brahman realization means to be completely free from the gross body, completely free from the subtle body, and situated simply on the platform of the soul. And that is what one achieves in deep sleep. So now, of course, we're not trying to encourage everyone to get into sleeping in order to have some sort of some sort of spiritual experience. But still, this is his explanation. Of course, we should understand that that experience is still coming through the modes of material nature. That's why when you wake up, you don't feel intense ecstasy, which is actually there, if one realizes Brahma. But there's just some vague feeling of well-being and pleasantness, because one's consciousness is recalling being situated on the Brahma, on the spiritual platform, but still under the influence of ignorance. So one way or the other, the consciousness will act. Sometimes people ask that we say that the soul is always conscious, but then what does it mean if someone hits you over the head and you go and, you know, you fall into unconsciousness and then you wake up and you can't remember what happened or where you were or what's going on? All it means is consciousness is withdrawn from the body, and it may even be withdrawn from the mind, depending how deeply one goes into a state of unconsciousness materially. But the soul is always conscious. So therefore Prabhupada is making the point here that in order to avoid this unchaste consciousness, in order to avoid material consciousness, it's not enough to just switch off or try to switch off our conscious functioning. But we have to engage our consciousness in a nice way, in Krishna consciousness. Because otherwise we'll find that our consciousness will be acting earnestly. Acting in earnest means in a very determined way, in a very positive way, in a way that you can't, like, stop, actually. So that is there. That is consciousness. So we have to avoid unchaste consciousness, unchaste activity, by always engaging in devotional service. Always, 24 hours a day. 24 hours a day means, Prabhupada said, that at night before you take rest, you should read one chapter or some pages of Krishna book, the pastimes of Krishna. Then at night, you can dream about Krishna. That's very nice. And as you're falling asleep, then you shouldn't just let your mind sort of space out, but you should chant Hare Krishna within your mind and remember Krishna like that. So in this way, you can dream of Krishna during the night. Devotees who had a lot of association with Srila Prabhupada would say that sometimes they'd be watching Srila Prabhupada when he would take rest. And they would see that Srila Prabhupada, that even though he was sleeping, but his lips would be moving slightly. And if they listened very carefully, they could hear the Hare Krishna mantra. So even while sleeping, Srila Prabhupada was fully Krishna conscious. Actually, he wasn't really sleeping, just withdrawing his consciousness from the gross platform in order to rest the body. So, activities, or particularly speech, is being discussed here, unchaste speech. So, Maitreya is saying that he's saying actually that he's practicing this. He's feeling that I might speak in an unchaste way. But in order to avoid that, I'm now practicing speaking about Krishna. So we have to practice like this, speaking about Krishna. We have the power of speech, and that power is very strong, very strong. The tongue. The tongue is described as being the strongest of the senses. And in Padma Purana, it's also quoted by Srila Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it's stated, Atakshi Krishna Nama Adi Nabhaved Grayanindriya Sevan Mukhe Hi Jivado Swayameva Svarachada. So he says that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is completely transcendental. So how can our material senses perceive him? It would appear to be impossible. Material senses and the spiritual Supreme Personality of Godhead. How can our senses reach there and describe or contact him? But he says it is possible. It is possible by the mercy of the Lord. And how does one do it? First of all, sevan mukhe hi jivada. First thing is, engage the tongue. This, we have our different senses, but first sense, the tongue. Let us engage the tongue. If we engage the tongue, then the other senses can follow nicely. And how do we engage the tongue? Chanting the glories of the Lord and, of course, tasting the remnants of food which has been offered to the Lord. So, of course, to taste the remnants of food offered to the Lord, that we're very enthusiastic about generally. The point is made sometimes that devotees may miss Bhagavatam class or Bhagavad Gita class or like this. Devotees may miss Srimad Bhagavatam class, but no one misses Prasadam class. No one misses that class. Because it is like a class, it's a reformatory process for purifying our consciousness. So no one will miss that. Even if devotees are fast asleep, they'll still wake up and come and take prasad. Even though sometimes devotees have fallen asleep while taking prasad. But it's very unusual. Very unusual. So that's not so difficult. Not so difficult. But this other engagement of the tongue, to always, kirtaniya sada, always be glorifying the Lord. That is not so easy. That we have to cultivate and cultivate very sincerely. Make a real effort to avoid nonsense talk. Prabhupada would sometimes talk about the Mona Bhavas, those sadhus, so-called sadhus, who would take the Mona Vrata or the vow of silence. So they would be aware that material speech, or all the speech that you hear in this material world, it's completely a waste of time. Not just a waste of time, but it's actually detrimental. The more you speak, the more you hear materially, then it drags you down, actually. Drags you down deeper into the ignorance of material existence. So they think that in order to avoid it, I'll stop speaking, no more talking. Mona Vrata. So you can go up to them and talk to them, and they just sit there. However, sometimes, some of them, I remember there was one in England, he was very famous, called Hari Soham. And he had advertisements all over London that he was some sort of great yogi. So he took a vow of silence. But his practice was that you could hold a conversation with him. He would gesture in different ways to indicate what he wanted to reply. Or if it was the sort of thing he couldn't just gesture about, he would write out the answer. So, Srila Prabhupada made the point that this is all very well in one sense. But he is talking by writing it down. And it's such an inefficient way in terms of speed of expressing yourself, that he might as well just have spoken. Because to write down what you're trying to say probably takes 10 or 20 times longer than just saying it, or something like that. So what a waste of time. So he took a vow of silence for 14 years, but in the 13th year, he died. So, what a waste of time. So Prabhupada said, real silence means not to talk any nonsense. But you can talk about Krishna. If you talk about Krishna, then not only are you avoiding the detrimental effects of talking nonsense, but you're actually gaining the positive benefit of talking about Krishna. Transcendental sound vibration purifying the heart. So it's not just a matter of coming to a neutral point by not speaking any longer about nonsense, but you get a positive benefit. So it's much better. Much better. But we have to be careful to stick to the bona fide talks about Krishna, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's qualities, Krishna's philosophy, Krishna's service, Krishna's devotees, so many things about Krishna. So we should always have something to say about Krishna. Like if I were to ask any of you now, tell me something about Krishna. Tell me about one of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. Then we should be able to just say something nicely. Tell me something about the pastimes of the devotees. Then we should be able to say something. Because we should always keep this, the meditation should be there in our minds. Tell me one of Krishna's qualities, and tell me a pastime which displays one of his qualities. Any volunteer? Anyway, I'm sure you can all do it very easily. But we have to be able to do it. Like, how many pastimes do you know well enough that you could explain them, you know, reasonably, in a reasonably detailed way without being vague at different points in the narration? How many? So, and how many of Krishna's qualities do you know? Krishna has, of course, unlimited qualities, but particularly they're described as being 64 in number. So how many of those qualities do we know, and how many of them could we describe with particular illustrations from Krishna's activities? Anyway, we should cultivate this. This is what Krishna consciousness means. Krishna consciousness means you hear about Krishna. And when you have heard, that all that sound vibration, all that information and everything enters your mind and intelligence, it enters the heart, and it stays there. Not, as they say, in one ear and out the other. Or, even worse, to not even go in one ear to start off, but sort of bounce off. Unfortunately, it may happen. No, we should be conscious of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada would do this sometimes. Some of the devotees who traveled with him, particularly in India, would tell me that they'd be at a program in front of thousands of people. Prabhupada would be talking. And then he'd suddenly turn around and say, "You speak now." So you would just have to get up and speak. You couldn't say anything else. I mean, you couldn't object or try and get out of it. It was just completely out of the question. So, we should be like that, ready to speak about Krishna at any time. And how can you do that? You can only do that by always remembering Krishna and always being fixed in Krishna consciousness and never letting your mind deviate. Just consider if your mind was deviating and you were thinking of some sense gratification and suddenly you're told, right now, speak about Krishna. It would be a, you know, very difficult, actually, a very embarrassing situation to be in. So we should never let our minds go off like that. But we should always be absorbed in thinking of Krishna. And not in some whimsical way either. As Maitreya is saying here, that he is describing, he's glorifying the Lord with this pure speech. How? Based on what he's heard from a spiritual master, not just some concoction, not just some sort of speculated, dreamt up thing, manufacturing some philosophical idea or something of that sort. Not like that. Not something which comes from the mind, but something which has come from the spiritual master, something which one has received in parampara. The mind is such a thing. Being completely materially conditioned, in fact being actually a material element, the mind, of its own accord, it's only capable of coming up with material conceptions. So if we talk about Krishna, or try to talk about the Supreme Lord, on the basis of what is manufactured by our minds, it'll be prone to be material. Just like we know that people who are on the material platform, conditioned souls, if you ask them, describe God, then they can only describe God or conceive of God in terms of material experience. That's all. Like they may have heard that God, he is the original person. He is the father of the... You go back so many generations, he's the first generation. He's the first one. So therefore they would think that seeing he's the first one, and he's apparently still living now, he must be extremely old. He must be totally ancient, like a living fossil or something like that. So therefore they're prone to picture God as an old man with white hair and a white beard, very sort of, you know, looking totally old, playing a harp, sitting on a cloud or something like this. So this is a material conception. They don't know that even though Krishna is the oldest, he's definitely the oldest, he's actually eternal. He's so old. You can't even place some age on him. He's so old. But they don't know that he is a fresh young youth. Navayovana. What's the verse? Purana Purusham, another Yavanam Cha, something like that. Anyway, Lord Brahma describes him. He's the oldest person, but he appears as a fresh, young youth. Or some people may hear that God, or they may understand that God, he is holding everything together. He's controlling everything. So therefore they think that God, he's holding all the planets in place, he must be very strong. So they make a picture of God like Atlas holding up the planet. You've probably seen Atlas. And Atlas has these big muscles, like he went on some massive course of weightlifting or something like that. So now he's able to hold up this planet Earth, although he appears to be struggling. So they're thinking he must be like that. So this is all material. This is all material. So people who are on the material platform, they'll only be able to conceive of God in these material terms. Otherwise, they just won't be able to accommodate it. Transcendental conceptions. They certainly can't be generated from their minds, because their minds are completely material. But these correct ideas, they're transcendental, so they can't be generated from the material platform. Or they may think that God, if everything is in God, then God can't be a person, because we see persons, and persons are limited. Two arms, two legs, a head, and so on, fitting in a certain amount of space. So how can God be a person if he's unlimited? As soon as you say person with arms and legs and so on, then immediately they think, oh, limited. So God can't be a person. This is one important reason why people in general are prone to have impersonal conceptions of the Supreme Lord. Because they feel that because God is so vast and unlimited, it's not possible for him to be a person. It just doesn't make sense. And it doesn't make sense by material logic. But we're talking about spiritual logic, that Krishna is actually unlimited but still a person. If we say that he's not a person, that he can't be a person, then we're actually limiting him. That we're capable of being persons, but he's not capable of doing something that we can do. So anyway, if we speak in a whimsical way, just our own mental concoctions about Krishna, then we are bound to come up with wrong ideas. So therefore, he is saying, Maitreya is saying, that what I'm speaking is what I've heard from my spiritual master, from bona fide authority. This is what I'm speaking, not what I heard from my mind, not what I heard from him, but what I've heard from my spiritual master. Prabhupada makes the point here that there's no real question of remembering everything and being able to repeat everything that the spiritual master has told you. But even if you can't do that, still, at least if you, in a chaste way, sincerely repeat whatever you're capable of repeating, that'll be sufficient. You can't describe Krishna completely. It's described that Krishna is so vast, he's like an unlimited ocean. And if you go down to that ocean, and you dive in, and you swim around, so how far can you swim? You can just swim in your own little area. But that ocean of Krishna, Krishna is an ocean of nectar. So wherever you dive in, and even if you only swim around a little bit, it'll just be nectar. It'll simply be nectar. Pure transcendental nectar. So we must try and follow in these footsteps then of Maitreya. And really make an effort to avoid this unchaste speech. Of course, unchaste speech comes from unchaste thought. It's not that words just start coming out. But however we're thinking, we'll speak in the same way. So we have to avoid offenses within the mind, avoid thinking badly of devotees, avoid thinking materially generally, always cultivate remembrance of Krishna, and always try and speak about Krishna in different ways. Actually, Prabhupada said that if you can't speak about Krishna, then you can be like the Mona Brothers. Then just don't speak. Just be quiet until you become inspired to speak about Krishna. But don't just talk nonsense. Anyone have any comments or questions? A quality of the soul. The soul, when we talk about the soul, we mean ultimately the spiritual body, because the soul is actually the spiritual body which has contracted itself. And when one becomes purified, then the soul, the spiritual body, will unfold actually. So the spiritual body has arms and legs, or, you know, it depends what your spiritual body is like. And it's also conscious. It's also conscious. So, of course, in the material world, you are not your body. But in the spiritual world, you are your body. That, in fact, is one reason why we're so prone to think that we are this body. Because in our pure state, we are the body. We are the spiritual body. It's not like you have a spiritual body which is Satchitananda. And in it there's a spirit soul who isn't just conscious of that body. No. But you are the soul, so you are your spiritual body. And consciousness is a quality of the spiritual body or of the self. There's one purport, it's in Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, I think it might be verse 15, anyway, it's somewhere around there. Prabhupada says that the soul is consciousness and conscious. The soul is both consciousness and conscious simultaneously. Actually, we're having a bit of a debate when I was in England recently. Is the soul conscious or is the soul consciousness? So I tried to look up on the computer. State the statement that the soul is consciousness, or that we are consciousness, like that, all the different
ways that it could be expressed. But that was the only time that I found that Prabhupada said that the soul is consciousness. Otherwise, you know, that the soul is conscious is...
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 6, Creation of the Universal Form, Text 37.
Ekanta
labham
vachaso no pumsam sushloka moler guna vadam aho shrutesh cha vidvadbir upakritaya kata sudhaya upasam prayoga ekanta labham vachasanu pumsam sushloka maler guna vadam aho shrutesh chava Chavit Vatbiru Pakritayam Katasudhayam Upasamprayogam Ekanta Labham Vachasonu Pumsam Sushloka Moler Gunavadam Aho Chescha vidvat biru pakritayam Katasudhayam upasamprayogam Ekanta labham vajasonu pumsam Sushloka moler gunavadam aho Chescha vidvat biru pakritayam Katasudhayam upasamprayogam
Ekanta. The one which has no comparison.
The one who has no comparison.
Labham.
Gain.
Vachasa.
By discussion.
Nupumsam.
After the Supreme Person.
Sushloka.
Pious.
Mole.
Activity.
Gunavadam.
Glorification.
Aho.
It is so said.
Shrute.
Of the ear.
Cha.
Also.
Vidvadbir.
By the learner.
Upakritayam,
being so edited.
Katasudhayam,
in the nectar of such a transcendental message.
Upasamprayogam,
serves the real purpose.
Being nearer to.
Translation.
The highest perfectional gain of humanity is to engage in discussions of the activities and glories of the pious actor. Such activities are so nicely arranged in writing by the greatly learned sages that the actual purpose of the ear is served just by being near them.
Responsibly.
The highest perfectional gain of humanity, is to engage in discussions of the activities and glories
of the pious actor.
Such activities are so nicely arranged in writing
by the greatly learned sages
that the actual purpose of the ear is served
just by being near them.
Purport Vachana Prabhupada. The impersonalists are very much afraid of hearing the activities of the Lord, because they think that the happiness derived from the transcendental situation of Brahman is the ultimate goal of life. They think that anyone's activity, even that of the personality of Godhead, is mundane. But the idea of happiness indicated in this verse is different
because it relates to the activities of the Supreme Personality, who has transcendental qualities. The word Gunavada is significant because the qualities of the Lord and his activities and pastimes are the subject matter for the discussions of devotees. A rishi like Maitreya is certainly not interested in discussing anything pertaining to mundane qualities. Yet he says that the highest perfectional stage of transcendental realization is to discuss the Lord's activities. Srila Jiva Goswami therefore concludes that topics regarding the transcendental activities of the Lord are far beyond the transcendental realization of Kaivalya happiness. These transcendental activities of the Lord are so arranged in writing by the great sages that simply by hearing of those narrations, one becomes perfectly self-realized, and the proper use of the ear and the tongue is also achieved. Srimad Bhagavatam is one of such great literatures, and the highest perfectional state of life is attained simply by hearing and reciting its contents. Translation. The highest perfectional gain of humanity is to engage in discussions of the activities and glories of the pious actor. Such activities are so nicely arranged in writing by the greatly learned sages that the actual purpose of the ear is served just by being near them. Om Vijnana Tamarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshura Militam Yunatasma Shigurane Namaha Vanchakalpat Rupyas Cha Kripa Sindhubi Avacha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasudhi Gauravanyananda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this is a type of, at least in the purport, Prabhupada is expressing in this way. It's like a type of a warning to the impersonal. The impersonalists are afraid. They're afraid that somehow or other they're going to be exposed to some sort of material influence, some type of material attraction, and then their spiritual position of Brahman realization or whatever advancement they may have made in the direction of Brahman realization, that may be undermined. They may lose that and fall down due to being exposed to some sort of material attraction. Srila Prabhupada points out that the impersonalists, if, for example, they happen to be in some big public gathering, and one of them, at least say a sannyasi, somehow or other he happens to bump into a woman, then this is a big calamity, actually. He may just bump into her just as he's moving around, just some innocent type of encounter like that. But immediately he has to go to some holy place, bathe in holy river, perform some sacrifice or some ritualistic activity which may be quite involved, to somehow become purified of this. So, they're very worried. They're in great anxiety. Even amongst Vaishnavas or those who are somewhat affiliated with Vaishnavas, similar type of concern is there. Like it's the Swami Narayan people. Their sannyasis are not meant to see a woman. When they have their meetings, the ladies have to sit in another room, or else they have to sit in the same room. Then they have to put a big curtain up so they can't see. Of course, not that we as Vaishnavas encourage frivolous mingling or this type of activity, but certainly we're not in anxiety like that. Like Vishvamitra Muni, he was performing Hatha Yoga. He was actually trying to realize the Supersoul through Hatha Yoga. And all that happened was that he heard the ankle bells of Menaka tinkling. even he didn't see them. But just that was sufficient to make him fall down. So generally these people are not properly situated in Krishna consciousness or in the process of developing Krishna consciousness. They feel themselves to be in great danger. They are in great danger, actually. If they become exposed to some sort of material attraction. So, this is a warning then to them. It's a warning, in a sense, very similar to the warning that Srila Rupa Goswami gives to the materialistic sense enjoyers. Srila Rupa Goswami says that if you are interested in maintaining your involvement and your attraction and attachment to family, society, friendship, love, country, and all these types of material relationships, if you place great value on those things and feel it very important to maintain your involvement in those things, then don't go to Keshigat. Don't go to Keshigat. Because there you may see a certain young cowherd boy standing in a threefold bending form playing the flute. His name is Govinda. Of course, Govinda means he who attracts the senses and satisfies the senses. So watch out. If you see him down at Keshigat, then despite your enthusiasm for all these material things, you're going to lose that. You're going to lose interest in those things. So you may feel there may be some disappointment that now I'm not so attracted to those things. Because you're going to become attracted to Krishna. So watch out. Don't go to Keshigat. So naturally, of course, the reaction of the devotees is to immediately rush down to Keshigat. Or to always be very enthusiastic to see the deity form of the Lord, to hear the descriptions of the Lord, to associate with the devotees of the Lord, chant the holy names of the Lord. The devotees are very enthusiastic because there is a taste there, very nice taste. There's great happiness there. Actually, there's great enjoyment. The devotees, when they're absorbed in their Krishna conscious activities, they're enjoying very much. Great enjoyment is there. Even sometimes, they become overwhelmed by that enjoyment. For example, there are different examples of this, but Daruka, Krishna's charioteer in Dwaraka, when he's not driving the chariot with Krishna on it, then he's with Krishna. And apparently he particularly performs, other than driving the chariot, he performs the service of fanning Krishna. So one day he was fanning Krishna there in Dwaraka, and his body was shaking in such ecstasy that he kept dropping the fan, and he just couldn't fan nicely. So he was cursing himself. Not himself. He was cursing these ecstatic symptoms. And he was sort of addressing those ecstatic symptoms that go away so that I can carry out my service. Very nice. So the devotees are enjoying a very high standard of happiness. Srimati Radharani is looking at Krishna, and you all know that, I would assume, that when she blinks, when her eyes blink, she feels it to be a great interest. But also, when she cries in ecstasy, then her eyes become filled with tears and she can't see Krishna clearly. So she curses those ecstatic tears. She actually curses them with very strong words that they're interfering with her, seeing Krishna. So the devotees certainly relish a very high pleasure. But unfortunately, the impersonalists generally, they regard this pleasure that the devotees experience as being just another version of material pleasure. simply mundane, therefore something that should be carefully avoided. So they're very, they're in anxiety actually. They're very afraid that I may hear about Krishna, I may become attracted, I may become involved in chanting Hare Krishna, I may somehow or other experience some happiness, and that may disturb me from my position of being fixed in Vrindavan, in that type of consciousness. So this is their fear. But this is all that they're afraid, because they have a great misconception. And that is that the pleasure in Krishna consciousness is simply another type of material pleasure. But of course it's not. We know very clearly that the pleasure which is obtained through hearing about Krishna, chanting his holy names, and engaging in Krishna conscious activities in devotional service, that pleasure is completely spiritual. Completely spiritual. Not at all material. And as evidence of that,